Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host. Thank you for joining us for our first of 2 hours on this Thursday. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9, and don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yoes. That is my name, S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S, or go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I'll share with the people, unless you don't want me to, and I won't, of course. Coming up in the second hour of the show, it will be the infamous, the notorious NWA Sports Report with all the usual suspects. We have to talk about the surreal suicide of Aaron Hernandez, the former New England Patriots All-Pro, then charged with murder, hung himself. At least that's the story that's coming out of that situation. We'll talk about that. And, of course, we'll chop up the NBA playoffs. Plus, let's go in on Kobe versus LeBron, shall we? Everybody's got an opinion. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Dre. It's all coming up on the NWA in the second hour of the show. A little bit later in this first hour, we're going to open up the phone lines. You know the number, 410-319-8888. At 5:30, we'll open the phone lines. We want to hear from our listeners. What do you all think about the process of law enforcement reform in Baltimore? 2 years after the death of Freddie Gray and the uprising, yesterday made 2 years since Freddie Gray died after that infamous now van ride in the back of a Baltimore City police van. The uprising occurred, obviously, after his funeral. So we want to know, we want to kind of check in with our listeners and talk to them about their thoughts on the process, if you want to call it that, of law enforcement reform in Baltimore. It's been a lot of incidents connected to law enforcement. Many of them have made national headlines, so we want to get into all of that with our listeners, and we always appreciate their insights. That's at 530, 410-319-8888. Before we get to that, though, let's set it up a little bit. And let's invite our friend Lisa Snowden-McCrae, associate editor of City Paper, to join the conversation. Lisa, good to hear your voice.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Of course, of course. You have been spending some time with Jill Carter, who is now the director of the Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement. She's yep. taken that she took that position in December. Obviously, she was a longtime delegate from the 41st District. But we bring her up in this story up that you posted last week because now she is the woman who is kind of directing the process of possibly setting up a civilian review board. Talk about the process and Jill Carter's role in it.
Okay, yeah. Last week in City Paper, we ran an interview that I did with Jill Carter about taking over the position, you know, some of the things that are going to be on her plate now, especially in light of the consent decree. In the midst of that reporting and asking her kind of about the civilian review board, I learned that there was not really a civilian review board at this time. So, you know, I checked with the mayor's office. They said, you know, don't worry, like, it's coming. That's what we were told last week. There was a meeting that was scheduled for today that was supposed to be the first civilian review board meeting,
and it didn't happen.
It did not happen.
Right. So let's unpack that a little bit, Lisa. There are a lot of listeners of this show, and other you know advocates for law enforcement reform that would suggest there's never been a civilian review board in Baltimore
City.
And
that's a very good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah. What does it mean from your perspective as far as sitting down with Jill Carter, who is now tasked with, her specific duty would be to oversee the civilian review board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So she's been doing a lot of work because there, There are problems that we, like you said, we've known that there's never really been a good, strong civilian review board for years. Like, literally, I was looking online. In May of last year, we ran a story with the old head of the Office of Civil Rights and Race Management, who, you know, we did a story on her because we didn't even know that, you know, the civilian review board existed. So we're like, if we're journalists in the city and we don't know, right, probably most people don't know. She voiced the same concerns that Jill Carter voiced, which is that there were a lot of things that were in place that kind of made this board toothless. You know, like, there was this weird thing where you had to get your complaint against the police notarized, which, like, who even knows how to go find a, you know, get do that?
Notary
there was a
public
statute of limitations. There was a bunch of things. There was a lag in information that the police had that they weren't sharing with the civilian review boards. So where, like, you know, the police internal oversight had already made their decision and moved on in the case, and the civilian review board was just starting. So, you know, there were problems. And Jill Carter told me that she's been in meetings after meetings right now with the police department, you know, trying to alleviate a lot of those problems. But, you know, she can sit in all the meetings all day long, and if the mayor's office isn't doing their job, then it's kind of all for naught.
Right.
It's one of those things where I think for a long time we didn't realize how important they were, and we're at this moment where they can be, it can be very important and very impactful, but it's kind of on everybody as citizens of Baltimore to make sure that, you know, we put pressure on everybody who's at that table making those decisions to keep pushing forward and keep making things happen.
Well, let me ask you this, Lisa. In her new position, people don't know a whole lot about, we're talking about the Civilian Review Board, but people don't know a whole lot about the Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement either. Obviously, Jill Carter has literally civil rights in her blood, literally. What is her vision for how she sees that office and maybe giving it a bit of a higher visibility?
Well, she told me what she really wants to do, what her whole goal has been in her public service life is being a voice for the voiceless. So that's kind of what she wants to do. She said that when she was in Annapolis, it was challenging, but she loved the work, but she felt like she was kind of getting away from that. There was a lot of, you know, meetings about speed bumps or, you know, noise complaints. And she was like, that's not what I'm what I'm here for.
Right, right.
So I think she wants to kind of make sure that people know that they're there, people know that they have options when they have complaints with things in the city. And, like, with the wage management thing, that's a thing, something that we don't really pay attention to at all either. That's making sure that, you know, city contractors are paying people fair wages, that, you know, they're reporting how much they're paying back to them so they know, like, you know where the money's going and who's getting the money. Right. And making sure that, you know, because a lot of times if you can't get a job in a lot of industries, you can be, like, a construction worker. So we want to make sure that people who maybe can't get jobs in other fields can get a job and then make a fair, you know, a fair wage.
Right, right. So let me ask you this, because I believe, so portions of the consent decree, the consent decree that the city agreed upon with the Department of Justice, call for improvements of the Civilian Review Board. Is that correct?
Yep.
So, okay. So how does that work?
So the first step is what the mayor announced today, which is the formation of the, my mind's blanking right now. I want to call it the Civilian Oversight Committee.
Okay.
That she named. I'm sorry, she announced that they were accepting applications for.
Okay.
Because that has to be done and ready to go within 90 days of the consent decree being, you know, being officially signed and, you know, going forward. So now that's happened and people can apply, like literally anyone can apply. I think the mayor set up a website where you can do that. And that's going to look into specifically how to, you know, make the Civilian Review Board better. Saying that, we all kind of already know. So I feel like for me, you know, taking off my reporter's hat, right, and being just like a normal citizen,
Right.
It's like, to me, it's like, is this slowing down the process? Is this really going to help us? I hope it is. But, you know, a lot of the things that I talked about, a lot of the things that you just said, you know, saying that we've known that we haven't really had one, we already have a good head start of what we need.
Right.
So hopefully, like, when those people are named and they're put in seats, they can get going fast.
So what about the actual, and before I even ask this next question, let me ID, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yose, your host. I'm on the phone with Lisa Snowden-McCray. She's associate editor of City Paper. We're talking about law enforcement reform, but specifically the implementation, or rather the establishment of a civilian review board, and as well as the implementation of the consent decree. So where are we, Lisa, from your perspective, as far as your reporting is concerned, where are we in the actual process of implementing the consent decree in between Baltimore and the Department of Justice?
We're still super early. Like, we're really, really early. Like, I know that Jill Carter was saying there was a lot of stuff that she couldn't tell me yet because the consent decree wasn't official. Like, there was things that she literally couldn't tell me until last Friday.
Okay.
So, you know, we're early in the process, and that, in a way, concerns me because I feel like, you know, when you first start things, that's supposed to be the easy part. Like, you know, right. It shouldn't be hard for us to get clear answers from the mayor's office about who are these names for these people on this committee. Do they know that they're named? Because I know that Kevin Rector of the Baltimore Sun reported that he'd spoken to at least one person that was put on, that was named to be on the civilian review board, who didn't even know. He was like, I'm glad that I am, but I didn't know. And that's what we were asking last week, because we're like, if you guys have this list and these people, you know, are on it and they're good, just as a normal adult, you can't just, you need to let me know more than a week out if I need to be in a meeting.
Of course.
So if you're telling me that the meeting's going to happen on April 20th and it's Friday before that and these people don't know, that's a problem. These are things that shouldn't be complex problems at this point. We got lots of complex problems that we're going to have to solve with this consent decree. This should be the easy part.
So let me ask you this, Lisa. If we did indeed officially establish a functioning, in quotes, a functioning civilian review board to oversee the Baltimore City Police Department, how would it even work? Where would it be located? Even beyond the process of selecting individuals for it, mm-hmm. which seems to be, if the FOP has its way, be mired down in bureaucracy for a long while. How would it even logistically take place?
Well, I don't know a lot of the details. I'm assuming they would probably meet at Jill's office, mm-hmm. I think. One of the things that I do know that you talked about, that logistically is another concern that we had in the story that I worked on today, was that you talked about, like, really making change and, you know, making sure that people weigh in. Like, we talked to some people from Baltimore Block. I think there were three people that applied to be on the civilian review board, and none of them made it onto the, the finalists.
Somebody from Baltimore Block made it as one of the finalists for the civilian review board.
No, none of them did.
No,
one of them.
I was about
applied,
to say, wow.
And then, yeah, that would be amazing. But one of them applied, and then was told he needed to apply again, but he couldn't. There were two other ones that did, and they didn't get on the list. Yeah, they didn't make it to the final list.
Oh,
so we need to be really careful about who we're putting on these things and who we're making sure is represented.
Oh, exactly.
To make sure that it looks like something that works.
Well, that's why you could hear the excitement in my voice.
Right.
When I thought, mistakenly, that someone from Baltimore Block was even in the running to be a member of the Civilian Review Board, because that would be a level of progression in this city that I certainly was not anticipating.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this. Wow, that really threw me, actually.
And I also know, I want to say it while I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
Like, I know when I talked to Jill, she said she specifically wanted diversity on this board.
Right.
And she wanted, I think, one of the rules that it has to be represented from each police district. And she wanted it to be people from all different types of viewpoints. I'm not really familiar yet with these names of the people. We're working on getting in touch with them now to see who they are and kind of what they stand for. Right. But it's important. That's one of the things that I think people should be looking at.
Right. So let me ask this, Lisa. So we know that there is, I mean, the consent decree, the report of the consent decree, the 157, something like that, page report. That came out of the Department of Justice, the pattern or practice report that came out of the Department of Justice was cut off at a certain point, obviously. As we go forward in the implementation, for instance, the issue of this woman, it's kind of breaking news, and we'll talk about it a little bit more in the next segment, the 52-year-old woman, Kim Doreen Chase, who has died, who was in police custody. She became, she suffered an illness, quote unquote, while in custody of Baltimore City Police. She has died. Would a incident or situation like that, a tragic situation like that, would that be included in the consent decree process, if you will? Would it be added in, for lack of a better term, as evidence as we go forward in trying to make these reforms? I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
I think that that's probably something that this, I'm remembering now what it's called, the Community Oversight Task Force, okay, that the mayor's collecting names for now.
Okay.
I think that that's probably something that they would be trying to figure out how that would get, you know, input from everybody, right, how to fit that in.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you think about it, okay, we know that the Baltimore 7, those seven police officers that were indicted on federal charges of racketeering, we know that they were literally under investigation during the process of the consent decree. They were under investigation by the Department of Justice. But we also know about the story of Ivan Potts, the young man who just recently got released after serving 2 years for a gun charge after being arrested by three of those seven police officers. So now, would the plight of Ivan Potts be included as part of the process of the consent decree going forward? We have stuff happening literally every day, every week in Baltimore City that would fall under the umbrella or the auspices of the consent decree and police law enforcement reform.
Yep, I'm working on a story right now that's going to come out in June that had to do with the Baltimore City School Police, and they also are mentioned in the consent decree.
Mm. Changes
happening to them too.
I didn't actually know that, and that makes sense. But I did not know that, so I appreciate you pulling my coach of that.
DOJ found that school police were being used out on the streets, kind of like as an auxiliary police force.
Right.
And you know the lines between the city police force and the school police force, they said, were kind of muddy and blurry, and there wasn't a clear way for people to register complaints that they had with school police officers. But those are some things that are supposed to be fixed.
Right. The other thing is, I think a lot of people would remember that really terrible videotape of that police officer slapping that young man really violently upside the head and then kicking him while another officer kind of watched. Absolute abuse of that high school student, and maybe that kind of misconduct may be something that may not be an anomaly. I don't know, but I mean the fact that we saw that obviously should raise concerns about misconduct even within the Baltimore City Public School Police Force.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting just how the full scope of observation and reform, how it will look as we go forward. As you said, I mean, we're still in the very early stages of this consent decree. Is there a timetable for when it's officially going to be, or has it been signed yet? I can't even remember.
Yeah, it was signed because that was the thing when the judge announced that, you know, it was going to go forward. And I want to say that was 2 weeks ago, but I might be wrong. It was the day after they had the public hearing.
Right. Which the Trump administration tried to stop But obviously, it did go forward. Are there more hearings scheduled to your knowledge?
No, that was it for that hearing.
Okay.
I don't want to say too much about all the details of the consent decree because I don't know everything. I can't like name all of it off the top of the head,
right.
off my head.
Right.
I know that if I could, just in the course of my reporting, I had to keep going on the Baltimore Office of Civil Rights. And they have a pretty good, if you go to their website, they have a pretty good list of events that are coming up. So that's a good place for people to check.
Right.
And then, of course, now the mayor has this website that's dedicated to everything related to the consent decree. And that's a good place for people to check, too, as far as the details. But I just feel like I can't emphasize enough that it's really everybody's kind of, you know, duty, I think, to keep tabs on this. And, you know, it's especially my duty and all the other journalists like you in the city to kind of keep on people. But, you know, everybody needs to, the devil is in the details.
Right.
And I think that this has the potential to make lasting change. And that's why the Trump administration was mad about it.
Yeah.
And it also could have the potential to be, you know, bogged down in bureaucracy.
Yeah. Well, you said the devil is in the details, and there are a lot of devils in these details as far as the issue, the process of law enforcement reform in Baltimore. And I don't think that's an overstatement. But
and let me tell you, because I have it right now, the consent decree's website is consentdecree.baltimorecity.gov.
Okay. All right. Very good. Lisa Snowden-McCray is associate editor at City Paper. Lisa, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, sis. We appreciate
you. Yes, you too.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, we're going to go to a break. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to open the phone lines. The number is 410-319-8888. You heard what we just discussed, what Lisa Snowden-McCray and I just discussed. We talked about law enforcement reform. We talked about the consent decree, the implementation of the consent decree, the setting up of a viable civilian review board, that process falling under the auspices of the of Joe Carter's new office as director of the Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, a position she's been in since December. So we want to hear what our listeners think about the process of law enforcement reform as we commemorate, as we mark 2 years since the death of Freddie Gray. The 2 year mark was actually yesterday, the 19th. Obviously, the uprising was sparked after his funeral near Mondawmin Mall and then at Penn North. We want to hear what you all think. After 2 years since the death of Freddie Gray, 2 years since the uprising, what do you all think about the process of law enforcement reform in Baltimore City? We've seen so much, and we've got even more issues, scenarios being added daily. We know now that this woman, this 52-year-old woman, Kim Doreen Chase, has died. The woman who, quote-unquote, suffered an illness while in police custody about a week or so ago, or rather on April 9th. She was arrested on April 9th. She has died, for those who don't know. So we want to hear what our listeners think about the process of law enforcement reform 2 years after the death of Freddie Gray, 2 years after the uprising. What do you all think? 410-319-8888. Give us a call. You're listening to First Edition. Here on WEAA 88.9, I'm Sean Yones, your host. As we open the phone lines, the number is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. We want to know what our listeners think about the process of law enforcement reform, the ongoing process of law enforcement reform in Baltimore 2 years after the death of Freddie Gray. We marked 2 years yesterday, actually, April 19th, and obviously the subsequent uprising that happened after his funeral 2 years ago, right around this time. Let me read this. Support for WEAA is brought to you by Johns Hopkins Peabody Institute, 17 East Mount Vernon Place, presenting a gospel concert Saturday, April 22nd in the Miriam F. Freeburg Concert Hall, with special guests the Divine Voices of Praise of the Ark Church, the Sanctuary Choir of New Shiloh Baptist Church, and the Peabody Conservatory Gospel Students, open to the public. More information at peabody.jhu.edu/events. All right. So again, we're opening the phone lines, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. We want to hear from our listeners. So many of you have called up and given your insights about the process of law enforcement reform in Baltimore over these past 2 years since the death of Freddie Gray, since the uprising. And now we want to know, in retrospect, looking back 2 years, it all happened right around this time in 2015. We want to know what you all think. We know you have a bunch of opinions, a bunch of insights, and we never take those for granted. We appreciate your wisdom. And let's add another tragic scenario to the burgeoning list, if you will, or the burgeoning narrative of law enforcement reform, or lack thereof, if you will, in Baltimore. A woman who police say, quote, suffered an illness while in custody, unquote, was pronounced dead today, this morning, at St. Agnes Hospital. Her death was confirmed by the Baltimore Police Department. The woman, 52-year-old Kim Doreen Chase, was arrested on April 9th for a warrant from Calvert County. Now, what makes this case even more bizarre is that when she was arrested, allegedly, she was taken back to her home briefly so that she allegedly could get her hair done. Now, whether or not she got her hair done or what happened at her home specifically, we don't know. But we do know that she was diverted from being taken directly to jail and was taken to her home. And then she fell ill, according to police, fell ill while she was in their custody. That woman has died. That woman has died. We don't know the specific cause of death, obviously. But again, it is just another chapter in the burgeoning, ongoing, typically tragic narrative of law enforcement, of policing in Baltimore City. So we want to hear from our listeners. What do you all think about law enforcement reform, the process of law enforcement reform 2 years since the death of Freddie Gray, 2 years since the time of the uprising here in Baltimore? Let's go into the phone lines. Let's go to Brother Jason first in Baltimore. Brother Jason, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Peace and blessings, family.
Peace, brother.
I'm part of a group that's actually not really in support of what's going on as far as the current consent decree. Matter of fact, just looking at the current police environment, we have some serious problems.
We do.
When Batts came in, we kept trying to tell folks not to hire Anthony Batts and bring Dr. Batts in to Baltimore City to lead our department. And during that time, we had a huge hiatus of senior leadership that just left out of Baltimore City. Some out of resentment of the hiring, some just out of the cultural change that Batts was trying to bring to the department.
So the hiring of an outsider, for lack of a better term.
Correct. Okay. And so we watched as the department kind of fell apart. And then Freddie Gray, with the incident with Freddie Gray and the stand down of officers, now with the consent decree. I'm telling you that our current police department, I have businesses on both sides of the city. I'm currently the president of the Irvington Business Merchants Association. I currently fight on this on a daily basis. We don't have a police department like we used to have. It doesn't engage the public anymore. In some cases, they're scared to engage the public. We're actually in discussion of hiring an armed security guard to patrol the corridor on Frederick Avenue to protect the merchants and to protect the patrons that are coming into our business district. Something's wrong when you have merchants looking at hiring an armed gun instead of having the police do their job. I've had majors tell me from all over the city that, you know, unfortunately I'm dealing with boys that I'm trying to turn into men, that we have a very, very young police department. And in some cases, it's not inviting to those that are getting into law enforcement. Why would you come into a city right now, under its current state or it's under its current police conditions, why would you want to come work for a police department like Baltimore City at this time? You're not going to apply for, or at least not the good candidates, are going to apply to come work for Baltimore City. They're going to go to every other agency around the country before they even consider a department that's in shambles right now.
Well, I think, Brother Jason, I think what you're saying resonates with a lot of people. And quite frankly, and I thank you for your call. I think that there's a lot of questions from people, and they are legitimate questions about sinking, for lack of a better term, sinking more money, more resources into the Baltimore City Police Department, specifically connected to the process of implementation of the consent decree, because we know for a fact that in order to properly implement the consent decree, it's going to cost millions of dollars per year. We don't know the exact number, but it's going to be multi-millions of dollars per year in order to craft the improvements, if you will, that have been prescribed by the Department of Justice. 410-319-8888 is the number. 410-319-8888 is the number. Let's go to Brother Leo Burrows in Bolton Hill. Brother Burrows, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Yes, good evening, everybody. How you doing?
All right, brother.
Well, two issues, one of which, the 1974 Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, right, has not been reformed to the extent it needs to be. The police are still given 10 days if they're involved in an altercation or a serious encounter with a suspect. And to that extent, they are given more time than any other police department in the country to set up their own case, whereas if I'm involved, I have to get a lawyer right away, and I have to be – I'm on the record right away. And so my question still remains, from a state perspective, when are we going to repeal, or when are we going to get the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights in line with the needs of the citizens of Baltimore City? And lastly, the sheriff's office. The sheriff is the only elected law enforcement official in Baltimore City that I know of.
Right.
And I'm wondering, when we talk about police reform, what are we saying with specificity with regard to the sheriff and his department and how they factor into this entire equation in terms of reform? I'm not hearing much of that. In fact, what I'm hearing is that the sheriff has to go along with what is given, but there are some special concerns and problems as related to the office of the sheriff, which I think he has an annual budget in the area of $14 or $15 million.
Right. Brother Burrows, thank you for your insights. We appreciate it. So Brother Burrows brings up a really important point, and it's one that I keep hearing being brought up over and over again. What about the involvement of the sheriff's department, the role of the sheriff's department in law enforcement in Baltimore City? They seem to be, I think, in the minds of many people, they seem to be underutilized, typically performing tasks connected to court duty and security, evicting people, and there are some other duties that the sheriff's department has. But what about a more expansive role for the sheriff's department? And Brother Burrows makes a very good point. The sheriff of Baltimore is an elected position, so there is that. There's some leverage, political leverage, if people wish to exercise it. 410-319-8888 is the number. 410-319-8888 is the number. I want to know what the listeners think about the process of law enforcement reform in Baltimore 2 years since the death of Freddie Gray, 2 years since the time of the uprising in 2015. I want to know what you think about law enforcement reform, but also I would like to hear your reflections on the death of Freddie Gray, on the uprising. Where are we as a city? I mean, even beyond the specter, or rather even beyond the parameters of law enforcement reform, where are we as a city 2 years after that tipping point time in our city's history, the death of Freddie Gray and the subsequent uprising that happened after his funeral? Also want to add into the conversation and let people know who don't know, a bit of breaking news, the woman who allegedly suffered an illness while in police custody when she was arrested on April 9th has died. That woman was pronounced dead this morning at St. Agnes Hospital. Her death was confirmed by the Baltimore City Police Department. The woman's name, she was 52 years old. Her name is Kim Doreen Chase. She was arrested on April 9th, as I said, for a warrant from Calvert County. She allegedly was taken to her home before taken to jail, which is bizarre in one way, and then obviously a break in protocol by police. Also, the officers connected to that incident, I believe, are being investigated and are been reduced to desk duty. I believe one may have been suspended. I can't remember specifically. We reported on it a while ago. But anyway, the number is 410-319-8888. What do you think about the process of law enforcement reform in Baltimore 2 years after the death of Freddie Gray and the uprising? Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Al in Baltimore. Big Al, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
I'm fine, man. How you doing?
Doing all right.
Okay. There's a better chance of reforming and curing cancer than curing or reforming the Baltimore City Police Department. You know, once again, I'll go back to it. It needs to be thrown into bankruptcy, this band. And has anyone shown a cost-benefit analysis of implementing this consent decree? You know, show me what the citizens are going to get out of it. They're going to get 7 more cops indicted or 70 cops indicted. You know, I mean, what are we, show me what the benefits are going to be implementing this thing, this egregious, document that shows how corrupt and vile the Baltimore City Police Department is. And, you know, they always want to say, all the police are not corrupt. There's just a few. Well, think of it this way. If all of them weren't corrupt, there wouldn't be any corrupt ones in the police department, because if they were all good, the majority of them were good, they would get rid of the corrupt ones. They know who the corrupt ones are. No one can convince me that they didn't know who those 7 cops were, that other people in that police department didn't know who those 7 cops were doing that overtime stuff, stealing money from people, and et cetera. To act like all that was done in a vacuum, is absolutely ridiculous. And this hamster wheel they have the citizens on, asking them, we should pay more money for a bankrupt organization. It's not a business model. It's never done. And it's been done before. It was done, I think, in New Jersey or Philadelphia or whatever.
Camden, New Jersey.
Yeah. Shut it down. Let the sheriff's department take over law enforcement. The first caller you said the police department's not doing anything. So if they're not doing anything, then what are we going to lose?
All right. Big Al, thank you for your insight, brother. I appreciate you. To Big Al's point, in Camden, New Jersey, they disbanded the police department and the entire department, and they replaced it with a non-union department. That's a key phrase there when you talk about policing. I remember speaking about that at an event, and when I mentioned the Camden experience and what would that be like in Baltimore, I heard an audible gasp in the audience. We need to get over ourselves and think about as many options as possible to have effective policing in our city. What do you all think, though? 410-319-8888 is the number. 410-319-8888 is the number. We're opening the phone lines. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9 FM. I am Sean Yoes, your host. We're talking about the process of law enforcement reform 2 years after the death of Freddie Gray, 2 years after the time of the uprising. Let's go back to the phones, though. Let's go to Oscar next in Baltimore. Oscar, you're on First Edition. How you doing, Oscar?
I'm doing fine, Sean.
All right.
First of all, let me say this. The first caller, okay, the area he's talking about on Frederick Road is called Irvington.
Right.
Now, in 1982, police from all over the city, we were doing overtime down there. I was in the Northwest at the time.
Right.
We could go work down there overtime. So people talking about bad things. Basically, nothing changes. Things remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, what Leo was talking about, policeman's Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have a good – I don't think he had much chance of changing that. And if you change it, there's something called the Fifth Amendment. If I'm being investigated for something that may – and I may be charged with a criminal or crime for what they're investigating, I don't have to say nothing. That's the Fifth Amendment. Any citizen has the same right. You don't have to say nothing. I'm going to get a lawyer. I had nothing to say.
Okay.
And the police are going to do the same thing. So – Leo can talk to you, the cows come home. You're not going to change the policeman Bill of Rights. You can believe that. Thirdly, when you talk about the sheriff's department,
mm-hmm.
go investigate, John. 85% of the sheriffs that's down in Baltimore City are retired police officers from some jurisdiction, and many, many of them are from Baltimore City. So if you think they didn't do right when they was on the Baltimore City Police Department, you think when they go down there and work for John Anderson and all them guys that are down there, you saw during the Freddie Gray case when those officers was coming into court, didn't you see them sheriff's guys shaking hands with them?
Yeah. Yes.
Every time they got out of the van, they were shaking hands. So if you think that the sheriff's office is going to do anything more than the Baltimore City Police Department, I got some land. I want to sell you a swimming pool in Alaska. So nothing is going to change. It's the same thing. And only thing that's going to ever change the police behavior if they lose their jobs, lose their pension, right, or go to jail. Anything else is just whispering. You're just talking. One other thing. Definitely get this out.
Right.
Some of the same people that are saying the police aren't doing anything and we got to get the police to do more. These are people that are calling for the police to come back into the city and the areas and do something. Then when the police come, they're going to say, well, they're locking us up for nothing. What do you think the police are going to do when you call up and say they're doing this and they're doing that and nobody's doing nothing? The police are not going to come down there and have a line dance with the people.
Right.
They're going to lock them up.
Right.
And you same people that's calling, they're not doing nothing. You're going to say, well,
right,
let's sue them. They're locking us up for nothing and messing up our career. So
all
what
right.
do you want?
All right, Oscar, you
Thank
got
you.
It all in. You got it all in. All right, thank you, Oscar. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's go to who's next. Let's go to Randy next. Randy, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
How you doing?
All right, man.
Look, Oscar actually took some of my thunder because when people call and they mention the Officer Bill of Rights and this and that, I don't think they really do their homework because with the Officer Bill of Rights, the officers are bound to make a statement. As well as regular citizens don't have to say nothing at all. Oscar was dead on. So when some of your callers call in and talk about the Officer Bill of Rights, they need to do their research. And then not only that, but the Officer Bill of Rights protects officers, like good officers now. I'm only talking about good officers. Protects good officers that falsely accused, you know, of something. Because civilians also allow officers as well as bad officers doing things to civilians as well. But I agree. Some things need to be changed for the better for the citizens, and bad officers do need to be weeded out. But they go hand in hand. The citizens and the officers got to work together. You just can't have, the citizens can't let the politicians take their common sense away because they just want votes.
All right.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
because I see a lot of that going on.
Okay,
and that's all I have to say. You have a good weekend.
All right, Randy, you too. Thank you, bro. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Sean in Columbia. Sean, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing, Sean?
All
Thanks
right,
for
bro.
Taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Normally, you know, I like to have something constructive, but you kind of blew my mind a little bit when you said, "Man, it's been 2 years since Freddie Gray," and then I think about the consent decree. That followed up, and for those that actually took the time to read it, it was just ridiculous, the things that were in there. And then I stopped and think about, okay, you know, we have a system here that's based off of, you know, the fugitive slave patrols of the, you know, the 1700s and 1800s.
Absolutely.
And I hear people say, okay, well, the system doesn't work. And then I stop and think it does work. It's working exactly the way that they want it to work.
The way
and
it
so,
was designed.
I'm a little bit messed up right now trying to think of something constructive because I look at all this and I see how we as people have become, you know, the fodder and the money for this prison industrial complex. And I'm not trying to upset the callers or anything. Usually I have something positive, but I'm just a little bit at a loss this time, my man. So maybe next time I have something constructive to say.
Understood, brother. No worries. Thank you for calling, Sean. Appreciate it. Let's go back to the phones, though, as we wind down this segment. Let's go to Adrian in Baltimore next. Adrian, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
How you doing, Sean?
All right.
I'm calling. It's nice to speak with you, but I'm calling in regards to the consent decree and in regards to the Freddie Gray case in terms of the police reform.
Sure.
Actually, I certainly believe that the police reform has become more emboldened as a result of that because the officers that was involved in the Freddie Gray case, they were never convicted. So now it gives all the officers more power to do what they wanted to in regards to the incident that happened with the young lady who they took home to get a hair done allegedly and whatever. But you talked about a process. I believe in terms of police reform that a process is going to be a long time coming in Baltimore City because of the entity of the foundation from which it was, which it is. Right. And so my hope is that we as a people come together and try to make a change and really hone down on what we need to do to make this police reform, because we got to understand we're in a system, and a system is difficult to eradicate because it's so entrenched.
Right.
And the only way to get out there is for people to come together, you know, and be involved to make a change for the citizens of Baltimore.
Okay. Adrian, thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Adrian talks about us making a change to reality. As we sit today, at least at this time, that we're at 95 homicides here in Baltimore. That number is a lot higher than most cities across the United States. That number is beyond last year's pace, which was the second highest total of homicides, only underneath or beneath 2015. So 2015, 2016, and now on 2017, we're on pace to have the most homicides in a 3-year period, I think, perhaps in the history of the city. And quite frankly, we'll be challenging many, many cities across the United States for that dubious distinction. Let's take another phone call, though. Let's go to Clarence in Baltimore. Clarence, you're on First Edition. Clarence, you there? Okay, Clarence was there. I don't know what just happened to him. Clarence, if you want to be heard, if you want to make your point, you can call back. Okay.
Clarence, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Hey, Sean, you know, when you give an entity like the Baltimore City Police Department and the FOP that kind of power and let them exercise it, there's no set of facts that they can't obscure or just make go away to suit their own position. Now, you know, law. You clearly define what is an illegal act by a police officer and provide a mechanism to prosecute them and make the consequences stick to them as anybody else. That's just plain and simple. There's consent decree. No, this is an illegal act you did, and here are your consequences. You also provide a mechanism outside of the governing body in that municipality to prosecute that. Now, I just want to say this. As far as the legal community is concerned, Sean, listen, I could care less about Donald Trump's ban on illegal immigrants or people entering the country, but people from Muslim countries all over the world entering the country, and black legal professionals and the ACLU going to court for them, but they won't go to court and challenge these police departments.
You see
the difference? We need law there, not a consent decree. You do this, we will prosecute you, and we will prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law, plain and simple. So you challenge those 12. I know it's only 9 of them, but, you know, Larry Moe and Curly, the 3 invisible ones. You challenge them with them. That. Thank you.
All right, Clarence. Thank you. Appreciate it. And I want to thank all of our callers for their insights and their wisdom on these issues, specifically the process of law enforcement reform in Baltimore 2 years after the death of Freddie Gray, 2 years after the uprising, the subsequent uprising. We never take your calls for granted. We never take your insights for granted. I wanted to say one more time before we finish this segment, just to update people who may not know, the woman who police had in custody, who had suffered an illness, according to them, while in custody. She was arrested on April 9th. She has died. She has died. Her condition had deteriorated over the last few days, according to the reports that I saw and the information that I've heard. Her condition, her physical condition, had deteriorated. She was pronounced dead this morning at St. Agnes Hospital. Her death was confirmed by the Baltimore City Police. She was 52 years old. Her name was Kim Doreen Chase. Again, she was arrested on April 9th for a warrant that was in Calvert County. And allegedly, before she was taken to jail, she was taken home, and allegedly, again, had her hair done. We're not sure specifically. We do know that there was a stop. There was a stop made before she was taken to jail, which was obviously a breach of protocol as far as the police department is concerned. All right, that's it for law enforcement reform in the first hour. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the second hour of First Edition, the world, not the world famous, the NWA Sports Report is coming up. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. ¶¶